Welcome to Perspectives. Today we'll be talking about affordable housing, a serious issue that's impacting the country as well as the state and the local community here in the Tallahassee and Leon County area. I'm Regan McCarthy filling in for Tom Flanagan, who's on a well-deserved vacation. Joining me in the studio today are Wanda Hunter, the Assistant County Administrator for Citizen Services, Michael Parker, the Director of Housing and Human Services for the City of Tallahassee, Antoine Wright, the Executive Director of Big Bend Habitat for Humanity, Dan Moore, the Executive Director of Ability First, and Jamie Ross, the President and CEO of the Florida Housing Coalition. And remember, if you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a call at 414-1234, or if you're outside of the Tallahassee area, call us at 1-800-926-8809. You can also email us at perspectives@wfsu.org or find us on Twitter at WFSUPerspective. As I said, affordable housing is an important issue on the federal, state, and local level here, and it's something that our leaders are really working to focus on right now. So I'd like to sort of start by talking about what we're seeing here on a local level. And I know, Michael Parker, the Joint City-County Affordable Housing Group just released sort of its recommendations for how to address affordable housing here. I think you were even part of that group, am I right?
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about what that group did and what your recommendations are.
Certainly. Well, this was a joint city-county endeavor, and actually everybody around the table was part of that as well. So what we looked at was we looked at all the demographic information about what the need was. Some of the statistics that you just mentioned were part of the background. We also looked a lot at what the different It's not a monolithic issue, affordable housing. I mean, there are different types of and different issues of starting all the way from dealing with homelessness all the way up to providing down payment assistance to people that have income that can then transition from being renters to homeowners. So there are a number of recommendations that came out of the that effort. Some of them had to do with setting aside or identifying specific resources that could be used for supportive housing, and that's what Dan's area specifically can talk about. Also, increased cooperation between the city and the county. The county has access to the Leon County Housing Finance Authority, which is an independent entity that can provide assistance for financing. And then also looking at some new techniques, such as a community land trust as a potential vehicle for establishing and maintaining affordable properties within the city.
Mm-hmm. And then I know that part of the recommendations, too, were to sort of continue a new group or continue that group to follow through on those recommendations. And I think that's something, Wanda, that the county really highlighted at its recent retreat. The county commissioners really focused on you know, backing that idea up. Is that right?
That's right, Reagan. The board did support all the recommendations that came out of the work group, including the formation of sort of an advisory council that would help steer the affordable housing practices in the future. One of the other elements that came out of that work group was, you know, housing design that was based on a model for best practices. And I think as we get further in the discussion, we'll talk about that. Some of our staff, including Michael, has gone on a tour and visited with one of the entities that has a best practices model that we think is adaptable to our community. So we're all excited about that.
Yeah, and that's something that my understanding stemmed from our now new county commission chair, Nick Maddox. I think he worked to get a grant to help the community to make visits to other communities who are maybe handling affordable housing well.
Yes, he did. He was really one of the first to be proactive in reaching out to the MacArthur Foundation, actually, that funded that grant that provided tours for community representatives and as well as local government officials to look at housing models around the country. And I think they toured really in the southern portion, New Orleans, Atlanta. They visited various communities that had put this model in practice and found that there are elements of it that would be ideally adaptable to Leon County.
Mm-hmm. Dan, I want to bring you into the conversation and kind of talk about, ability first. People don't initially think, oh, that has a lot to do with housing, with affordable housing. Tell us a little bit about what role you do play here in our community as far as affordable housing is concerned.
Sure. Ability first, as the local Center for Independent Living, you know, is primarily our mission is to serve persons with disabilities, but homelessness is really a disability issue. We got into this about 10 or 15 years ago because we found, you know, people with chronic disabilities that were chronically homeless, the only way they could break that cycle is to get into what is called permanent supportive housing. So we have about 60 units of individual and family permanent supportive housing, which means that we pay the rent each month for persons with disabilities who are chronically homeless and provide the supports to help them maintain that permanent housing. There's a very similar program over at the Big Bend Homeless Coalition. They have about 65 units of the same type of housing. And that's a real important part of our local inventory on helping people find affordable housing that cannot make it any other way.
Mm-hmm. And Antoine, you work with Habitat for Humanity. I feel like the role you play is a little more obvious, but just to fill our listeners in, tell us a little bit about, you know, what Habitat does in the community to help people find affordable housing.
Well, we serve a wide range of folks in the community. We serve from 30 to 80% of AMI. So we are obviously affordable homeownership. Mm-hmm. Versus Dan, where you have folks that are still in supportive housing. So we're kind of the end of the spectrum. So we're where you go when you finally make that mark where you can actually purchase. To date, we've built probably about 185 homes in the community. We've been in effect since 1982. We do on average about 10 houses a year.
Mm-hmm. And just for our listeners who don't know all the lingo, what are we talking about when we say that Habitat serves 30 to 40% AMI?
So when we talk about affordable homeownership, HUD recognizes affordable homeownership range going up to 80% AMI, and AMI being average median income. So if you make below 80% of the average median income for our community, then you fall in that affordable homeownership range.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And Jamie, I know you come from a little bit different perspective. You can provide, I was talking in the intro about how this is an issue that's definitely important here on our local level, but is also really playing out in an important way in the state and even federally. And I know we were talking on the phone about the other day about there's some positive things happening in the state in relationship to the state money, the trust fund that is sometimes used to fund affordable housing that you work with called the Sadowski Coalition.
Yes, thanks. Regan, first of all, I'd like to say I was really privileged to be part of the local effort here that was working on this affordable housing work group and addressing everything from homelessness to first-time home ownership. And this community has great models already for itself. That said, the Florida Housing Coalition, we're a statewide organization, and so we look at best practices and share best practices around the state, but also nationally. And Florida has a best practice that we share nationally, and that is the Sadowski State and Local Housing Trust Fund. That was landmark legislation that passed in 1992, so it's been around a while, had its 25-year anniversary. And what that did was it created a dedicated revenue source for affordable housing in Florida that provides funding to all of the counties, the 67 counties in the state of Florida, and your larger cities, your entitlement cities like Tallahassee. And it enables them helps them to meet the needs, their affordable housing needs at the local level because it gives them a funding source. They all have an obligation to provide for housing their entire current and anticipated population. A lot of people don't realize that, including special needs populations, the hardest to serve. But it was considered an unfunded mandate. Mm-hmm. It's in the law. Well, here's the funding for it. And it is great, and there is great news, as you said, and because I know sometimes people think, especially younger people, who've seen in the last 15 years sweeps of the trust funds that think of it negatively. The truth is that for the first 10 years of the program, none of the money was swept. And it looks like this year we may get back to the norm, to the way it's supposed to be, which is that all the money that goes into the trust funds is appropriated out by the Florida legislature so that all the 67 counties and the entitlement cities get the money that they need to help serve the affordable housing needs in their community, again, from ending homelessness to first-time home ownership. Some of the things that are happening this session, this is historic, is we have a bipartisan effort by Republican Senator Pasadomo and Democrat Representative Sean Shaw have filed bills to stop the sweeps, to actually stop the sweeps, which is amazing. It's great news to the folks who make up the Sadowski Coalition, which is 30 statewide organizations that run from the Chamber of Commerce, folks like Associated Industries of Florida, all the way to legal services, faith-based groups. So you're talking about AARP. Virtually every constituency in the state of Florida wants all the housing trust funds to be used for housing. So these will be popular bills, I believe, and that's something very new. We have not had that ever before this year. We also have a few other things that are happening at the same time, which is we just had a statewide affordable housing work group, different from what you were talking about, our local level. The legislature at the end of the session last year, or in 2017, commissioned an affordable housing work group, appointees from the Senate, from the House, from the governor's office, to come up with recommendations on affordable housing for this legislative session. And the number one recommendation, number one, is that all the Sadowski State and Local Housing Trust Fund money should be used solely for housing. So Florida has this great national model. We're the envy of other states because of it. We share it with other states, and other states have tried to emulate what we do in Florida, and some are. And the only issue is that the money has been swept quite regularly over the past number of years, and we hope to see an end come to that.
Yeah. And so just for listeners who maybe don't know a lot about the Sadowski Trust Fund or how that works, I want to explain, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or if I need a little help here. But that money, I believe, comes from the documentary stamp tax. So when you're doing a real estate transaction, then there's paperwork you need, and that costs money. And so it's from those real estate transactions. I think it's now 20 cents per stamp tax is used to help fund this coalition.
That's right, Regan.
Yeah, and I think we can talk more about that right after this break. Welcome back to Perspectives. Today, we're talking about affordable housing here in the Leon County and Tallahassee area, as well as is in the state and the country. It's an important issue that's impacting us on all levels here. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about the Sadowski Trust Fund, which is the money that the state has that it can disperse to local governments to help them to support affordable housing programs. And we were saying that this year we have one lawmaker who is working to, two lawmakers, a bipartisan pair of lawmakers who are working to make sure that that money doesn't get swept out of the trust fund. And I wanted to say, when we're talking about getting swept out, I think that was something that, according to what I read, really started around when the Great Recession started. And I think there have been like more than $3 billion swept out since that time. And it's being taken out, you know. Swept sounds kind of like a neat, oh, we'll just sweep it out. But, it's being taken out and spent for other purposes. I suppose there's the argument that during the recession, there was that need, and now maybe our economy is improving and that need is going away. And I wanted to welcome all our listeners out there, too. If you want to join this conversation, I think it's an important conversation, as I said, for our community. community and our state, please give us a call. Join us by calling 414-1234, or if you're outside of the Tallahassee area, call us at 1-800-926-8809. And so something that I was just starting to touch on there is the idea that lawmakers have been kind of sweeping this money away. You said there was just a state coalition that said, hey, actually, you should stop sweeping that money away. We actually need all that money. And there seems to be a little bit of a difference of opinion there. I'm remembering House Speaker Richard Corcoran last year. I have a quote from him here that I'll just read. He said, affordable housing has grown around this huge source of money. So it's no longer the people who can't afford housing. Now it's people who struggle to afford adequate housing, but they're fully salaried and employed. And I thought that was a really interesting thing for him to say. He's thinking, you know, oh, hey, we don't need this trust fund anymore because it's, you know, it's not just going to maybe our lowest of the low-income people. But I think that brings us to an interesting discussion on what is affordable housing. And I think that perhaps the statewide affordable housing groups would have a different opinion on what is affordable housing and who is it for than maybe House Speaker Richard Corcoran would have.
Well, Regan, if I could jump in on that. The beautiful thing about the SHIP program, that's the name for the program for the local government trust fund money, which is 70% of the money. It's the majority of the money. 30% of the money that comes from the Sadowski Trust Fund stays with the state and pays for predominantly apartments, the gap financing program, which is also a national model called SALE. That's about 30% of the money. So 70% of the money goes to the locals, to the SHIP program. And one of the beautiful things about the SHIP program is that it does follow certain legislative mandates, but within those mandates, it's up to the local communities to decide what their needs are and how they're going to use the money to meet their needs at the community level. So, so for instance, 65% of the SHIP money needs to be used for homeownership-related activities. What that means is that in a time when the economy is such that you can really get people into first-time home ownership with a little down payment and closing cost assistance, and there's a real need in the community for that, a community may decide to use its SHIP money predominantly in that area, down payment and closing cost assistance. Let's say you're not in that economic situation. Let's say you're in the situation where we were in the housing recession. We need to rehab homes. We had foreclosed homes. You could meet at the local level that 65% home ownership requirement by rehabbing homes that low-income people owned. It's always everybody has to be income eligible. So that is the real beauty of the program, is that one of the beautiful things about the program is that it meets community needs, and the community develops its own plan on how it's going to spend the money, and those plans are very flexible and can be changed according to what's needed at the community level. The need is tremendous. The folks on my staff, we do training and technical assistance on this program at the Florida Housing Coalition, and they are often heard to say that local governments could use 10 times the money that they get. 10 times is what they really could use. So the need is tremendous, and it also goes all the way down to homelessness. So to get to that criticism about it, maybe for folks who don't really need it. In fact, it's even that money is used to end homelessness.
Mm-hmm. Wanda, I want to let you jump in here a little bit. You know, we were just talking about this state group says, hey, local governments actually really need this money. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit from the county's perspective. You know, do we need this money? And what would we use it for?
Yes, most definitely. You know, as Jamie was describing, each community, you know, has its own unique character, and so their needs are obviously uniquely different. What I think I heard you describing was what we've termed as workforce housing and the needs of workforce housing. So, yes, there is a population that they are working, you know, whether their income is adequate, you know, two family households in some circumstances, perhaps one family household, but it's questionable whether their income meets the needs or the standard for affordable housing. So along with that, The services that are needed by these families, it has to be, or we would think the ideal model would that it would be in proximity to their workplace. You know, that would assist with transportation costs and ensuring their children are in, high-quality schools. So all of these are factored into where affordable housing is placed and how do we keep it affordable, knowing that all of these services are needed within, that community where, the housing is established.
Yeah, I would just say that access to safe and affordable housing is a basic tenet of what every community needs. I mean, so we have people that we're helping move into homeownership. We have people that are living in homes that have become deteriorated. Lots of elderly folks living on fixed incomes. And it's very cost effective. I mean, it's the alternative for some of those folks. If you can't maintain them in their own home, is to try and put them in some sort of much more expensive alternative. So it's a fundamental basic need of a community to have affordable housing. And it's not completely altruistic. Mm-hmm. It's also a basic need for economic development. When, we spend lots of money, the communities spend a lot of money trying to make their communities attractive for businesses. Well, one of the things businesses look for is a skilled workforce, and can they maintain and attract and maintain workers? Well, if there's not a range of housing for all of their workforce, then you are at a competitive disadvantage. And it's not a coincidence that housing starts are a basic economic indicator. Every dollar that's spent on building a new home, like at Habitat, translates and is magnified many times over through the entire economy. The people that build the homes, the people that furnish the homes, the people that sell the materials to build the homes. So it is a fundamental basic need. It's right up there with public safety and everything else. When you're evaluating a community and a place you want to live, you look at health care, you look at education, you look at housing.
Mm-hmm. Antoine, is that something that that Habitat considers when it's working to build a home? I mean, do you think about how that would have an economic impact, buying the lumber or, making purchases like that? Is that something that you guys think about?
Actually, it is. I mean, and we're very conscious of our buying power. I mean, nonprofits as a whole, but particularly for us as affordable homeownership builders, we're a national organization with local affiliates. We make sure we buy locally. We try to partner, and we also procure partnerships and sponsorships from local vendors. We try to use local subcontractors. But the other add there is more people that we put into houses, solidifies the tax base. So all of our homeowners pay, taxes. We have over 150 homeowners that we currently carry mortgages for. And annually, we write a check to the county for over $120,000. So there's a large economic impact there. The other side of that is, as Michael said, when you have folks coming to town, where are your workers going to work? If you can have high-end industry, you can have mid-level industry, but if you have nowhere for folks to live, you don't have a base. So there's a very impactful report called the Alice Report, and it talks about who is the face of affordable homeownership or the face of poverty, period. And, you talk about the working poor. For our program, pretty much everyone in my office would qualify to be an affordable homeowner. And if you go to most offices, it's not just the folks that are working in very low-wage jobs. It's some mid-level managers, it's some high-level managers in some positions, especially when you go in a nonprofit world. So the face of folks that we can help is huge.
Mm-hmm. I want to stay on that idea of the economic impact for a minute here, because I think that was part of what that the state affordable housing group that you mentioned before, that was one of the reasons they gave for why those trust funds shouldn't be swept, is because it could lead to a major jobs increase. Am I right?
Yes, it's very true. From every perspective, that's why folks like the Chamber of Commerce and the Florida Realtors and the builders and all of these industry groups fully support using all the housing trust fund money for housing. The number changes that's in the trust fund, because it depends on how much dock stamps are collected. As you pointed out, it comes from the dock stamp, right? So it depends on how much is collected. So what we ask for is just that all the money that's in the housing trust funds used for housing, we don't necessarily talk about a number because the number changes. However, because people do want to get a handle on that sort of thing, I would like to just give you these numbers. So we expect the amount of money in the housing trust funds, the Sadowski housing trust funds this year to be appropriated, that can be appropriated, to be $314 million at the low side. It may be somewhere between $314 million and $325 million. If $314 million is what's in the trust funds, and if the legislature appropriates it the way it should, the norm, what the norm used to be, okay, it's a trust fund, the money that's in there gets appropriated out for housing, doesn't get, as you said, swept for other purposes. What that would mean economically for the state of Florida is just mind-boggling. It's actually 30,000 jobs and about $4 billion with a B, positive economic benefit for the state of Florida. So I know I was asked by a reporter at the press conference where Senator Passodomo and Representative Shaw were announcing their bills. And by the way, there's lots of co-sponsors coming on those bills, and I do want to give a shout-out to our local senator here, Senator Montfort, who's always been a big supporter of using all the housing trust fund monies just for housing. He also spoke at the press conference. But a reporter asked the question, well, what about, you know, the legislature's concern over, you know, deficit or the economy or, you know, what if we need that money for something else? And my response was, there's nothing the legislature could do that would be better for Florida's economy than using the housing trust fund money for housing. Nothing.
Very interesting. I also want to return to a point that, Antoine, you were starting to make, which is about, you know, who uses affordable housing. I think there's, you know, people, as we were saying before, maybe have this idea about affordable housing is for our very lowest income people. But you were saying, you know, it could be maybe you're one of your higher level managers at a local nonprofit. And I think that's interesting. I wanted to bring you, Dan, into the conversation a little bit. You mentioned, you know, some of the people that you might work with who need affordable housing could be on the lower income, could be, you know, even facing homelessness. But I think when we talked on the phone, you said Ability First works with a wide range of people who have varying affordable housing needs.
Sure. According to the local Big Bend Continuum of Cares data collection through the Homeless Management Information System, there's about 1,000 to 1,400 people that will need to exit homeless services in one form or another from emergency shelter to transitional housing that need to go into affordable housing out in the community to leave the homeless services system. And we work with a wide variety of folks with disabilities within those pockets. And you talk about an incredible need if you're dealing with folks in the homeless service delivery system, that there's over 1,000. There's so many working poor. There are so many folks that are trying to, you know, piece together income. I guess the difference is when you're dealing with vulnerable people with disabilities, you know, with significant disabilities that have been unsheltered for a long time, their life expectancy greatly decreases every month that continues. So with our working poor or our young professionals who really would benefit from affordable housing, they have resources. They have families. They have friends. They have possible roommate situations. Our people die that don't get access to affordable housing, and they stay unsheltered. So I guess that's the difference. We need to across the spectrum in terms of resources that we bring into our community, but the safety net for our most vulnerable, certainly there's a huge need here in our local community.
Mm-hmm. And I see that we're making some changes to address that in our community. Something that comes to mind for me immediately are the new tiny houses that recently opened. And I know one of our reporters, Sasha Corner, recently did a report on that. And I know that at least one of those houses was made specifically for someone who needed an accessible home. And she was even saying, you know, the homes are equipped with Alexa, you know, who can help you run your home. Wanda, do you want to tell me a little bit more about maybe some programs that you know about? I think at one point the county was looking into a housing first model to sort of address some of the housing needs in our area. Or Michael, do you know about maybe some local programs that we're using to address housing needs in our area?
Well, we have a lot of different programs, and we have a lot of partners, some of them around the table here. So what we do is we try and have programs that cover the full gambit. So I mentioned earlier that both the city and the county assist low-income homeowners in staying in their existing homes by refurbishing and rehabbing them. We work very closely with a partner called the Tallahassee Lenders Consortium, which is a group of different local lenders that work together with us, and we provide down payment assistance for home buyers, people that can qualify for a mortgage, and if we can assist them on their down payment assistance. The median house price in Tallahassee is about $190,000. But if you take when Antoine was mentioning the area median income for a family of four, the area median income right now is $52,100 a year. That's the top end of it. Someone making that money cannot qualify for a mortgage for $190,000. So if you have people in your community that are working, but there's no way that they can bridge that gap, it's not to the community's advantage to let that happen. It's better for us to put those people into home ownership. Home ownership is a really important tool for community building. It was made reference to yesterday were with a group in Atlanta looking at some very successful models that have taken very distressed neighborhoods and turned them around. And access to affordable housing is a key element of that. So building communities and dealing with, and those are ways to address other needs in the community, whether they're health care, whether they're public safety. If you can provide a safe and sound environment and provide stable housing, you can address all those other elements that are very expensive if you're trying to maintain them on the other end.
Great, and we'll come back to that right after this break. Welcome back to Perspectives. Today we're talking about affordable housing in the Leon County and Tallahassee area, and in fact, throughout the state of Florida. If you'd like to join us on that conversation, please give us a call. You can join us by calling 414-1234 or 1-800-926-8809. You can also email us at perspectives@wfsu.org or find us on Twitter at WFSU Perspective. So during the break there, we started a little bit of a discussion on the difference between home ownership and home renting. And that's something that I've actually been wondering during this discussion about affordable housing. When we talk about affordable housing, are we talking just about a person's ability to buy a home? Or are we also, is being able to affordably rent a home part of that? What do we mean when we say affordable housing?
Well, it's actually both. You mentioned earlier about the cost burden model. And so the cost burden idea is that you're not supposed to be spending more than a third of your income on your housing expenses. So that can rely on mortgages, or that can be on rental. Actually, the majority of the households in this community are rental households. It's a little skewed in our community because we have a large student population that skews our data a little bit. But affordable rental is a very important part of the entire equation, particularly for people at the very bottom. We've been talking about 80% of area median income, but the very low income, people that are 50 and 25% of area median income, you know, homeownership is not something that's really an option for them at this point. So affordable rental housing is very important, and it can be everything from what Dan talked about, a supportive housing where there's services embedded in it, or it can just be with the, say, what the Public Housing Authority, which is another major partner here, provides subsidized rental housing for low-income individuals.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that we kind of touched on earlier is the continuum of care. So Dan mentioned it earlier, and the continuum of care goes all the way from homelessness up to, you know, temporary housing and ending kind of on the Habitat side with affordable home ownership. And as Michael said, all of those pieces are key. And we also have folks that don't have any income at all. So you kind of fall into the area of elder care, or folks with disabilities, or folks with other impairments. So everyone needs to have a home, no matter whether it's rental or owned. They need to have a safe place to be.
And I think the objective for our community, and probably for many others, is that there are options available. There are people who choose simply to rent, and we want to ensure that, you know, there are affordable rental home housing options. Likewise, for those who choose to transition from renting to home ownership, which from a county perspective and a community perspective, that's ideal because that builds our economic base. So, of course, we would want to encourage that. But, again, we need to ensure that there are options available to assist people either with financial education or with sustainable employment that would help them transition from rental to permanent home ownership. So all of that fits into the model.
Regan, if I could just maybe bring it up
to a broader
umbrella.
Yeah.
Sure. When you're talking about, so what is affordable and what are we talking about? Something I think maybe we take for granted because everybody around this table, we deal with housing all the time. But put yourself in the position of someone who doesn't, right? And the question is, why? Why do we have to subsidize housing? Why do we have to do this stuff to make it affordable? And so it's fundamental to understand that the price of housing, whether it's for sale or for rent, is market-driven. And the for-profit sector is making a profit. They're supposed to. That's not a bad thing. But that's what they're doing. So if you were going to sell your house that you owned, you'd ask your realtor to get the best price, right? To get the highest price.
Right.
We would all do that, right? So it's whatever the market will bear. You're not going to sell your house for what it costs you to build it, or what you put into it. You're going to sell it for whatever the market will bear. This is how market rate housing works. Why do we need affordable housing? Because when you have a disparity in incomes, which we do and we're always going to have, but it is growing more now than it used to be, because, you know, we don't have the same kind of union wages and that kind of thing. There was a time when, you know, a person who works, like they talk about in the Alice report, you know, just a regular working family didn't need any subsidy. But now we do need to provide subsidy, even if whether it's homeownership or it's rental, because the market prices are more than what a person can afford, even if they're working 50 or 60 hours a week. So we have all kinds of reports. I'm glad that Antoine mentioned the Alice report, which really brings that home, that the folks who need assistance are working folks. Then we have a national out-of-reach report that tells us what is the housing wage? How much money does a person in Florida, they do it for the whole nation, but how much money does a person in Florida have to earn to be able to afford the fair market rent, in other words, an unsubsidized rent on a two-bedroom apartment? Well, that number is about $20 an hour in the state of Florida. It's not that way in every community. You can also break it down by county. So, but it's $20 an hour. Now, think about it. How many folks are making $20 an hour? So you see, that's why we need assistance to make housing affordable. And as Michael was saying, you know, it's an infrastructure for the community, as he said. You know, it's an economic driver. So it's in everybody's interest. It's not just in the interest of the person who needs an affordable rental, an affordable home. It's in everybody's interest that we have a segment of the housing market that is affordable. And we're not going to get there by the market providing it, because the market works on whatever the market will bear. We need to make, or we want to make, the most money. So that's sort of a foundational, what is this all about?
Yeah. And I want to talk about that idea a little bit. You know, I feel like we've discussed that there's a clear need for affordable housing and that, you know, there's a wide range of people who need it. But I'd like to talk about, like, what we're doing to get it. So we have money that's coming from the state government, from our documentary stamp taxes that we can use to subsidize that. And Antoine's got, like, a sweat equity method where maybe we can build homes and put people in affordable housing. But I guess I'm wondering sort of like what maybe like what the local government is doing to make affordable housing happen. And I'll tell you specifically, you know, I think that some people see a lot of housing going up in Tallahassee, right? And we go, man, look at all that housing. I'm thinking like on Gaines Street, we've got all this housing. And we go, holy cow, do we even have enough people to fill all that housing? People are maybe, you know, surprised by it or frustrated by it. And they're saying, you know, that's housing for one kind of person. That's housing for students. But that's not affordable housing. That doesn't fill our housing need. But there's, I guess, on the flip side, what can the city do about it? You know, you can't say to that developer, build a different kind of housing or, you know, build something else.
Right. Well, and the role is not to try and put the brakes on the construction of market rate housing. Mm-hmm. It's just to try and make sure that there's a place for all the different income groups to realize housing options. So you use the example of the student housing that's been going on. That's being driven by specifics because of our university population. But that, those houses are not designed for low-income families. They're designed for students. So that the market's taken well care of that. What we have to do is provide some different elements. And one of the things that you asked, what are the city local governments doing? So we try and work on both ends. On the private market side, we try and provide incentives to reduce the cost to build the house, to encourage private developers to build housing. So fees that might be associated with building the house, connecting to water and utility rates, providing what different kinds of zoning options allow you to be higher density so you can get more return on the number of units you can build in return for making sure some of those units are affordable. So that's one side that we do on the regulatory side, and that's all working in conjunction with the private sector. And then there is the other side where we receive funds from the state and from the federal government and some of our local discretionary money, and we put it into things like down payment assistance, rehabbing homes. We also work very closely with the state because, as Jamie mentioned, one of the things that Sadowski Act money goes to is the construction of affordable rental housing. And using that with one of the other powerful tools, which is low-income housing tax credits, which are distributed by the state, we try and encourage that investment to build rental, affordable rental housing in our community. And we work with the Housing Authority, which is the single largest provider of rental housing. They do it in two ways in this community. They have units that they own and operate, public housing, and then they provide what are called Section 8 vouchers, which are basically vouchers that go into to low-income families that then are used for them to rent units on the private market.
Mm-hmm. And so you were mentioning, I think, the idea of zoning a little bit, right? So we can say, hey, this area is zoned for, you know, a multi-family dwelling unit or it's zoned residential, and you can sort of make decisions about what kind of housing will be built in an area based on zoning. But then aren't you still sort of left to the developer's discretion, you know, just because it's zoned for a multi-family dwelling unit doesn't mean that it's something that will be priced at an affordable rate.
Well, that's why you try to provide the carrot. So if the developer says, you know, right now, based on current zoning, you can build 100 units on this parcel of land. But if you want build affordable housing, we'll increase the density. Maybe we'll give you 20% more units that you can build on that site, provided that you set aside a certain number of those units. So that's the carrot. It's a way for the private sector to be able to subsidize essentially at the upfront cost by lowering those upfront costs as an inducement for them to put in affordable housing. It has to be a mixture of all of those things, quite frankly, to work.
Mm-hmm. And then something else that I assume that the city must have to address or that local governments must have to address is maybe the stigma that sometimes then that affordable housing comes with, right? So a developer might say, I don't want to put in that affordable housing because then my people, you know, here who have their very expensive, beautiful homes will be upset. They won't want to move into these expensive, beautiful homes next to the this row of townhouses. Mm-hmm. They'll feel like they don't want to live next to that. I mean, I live in a townhouse, but they don't want to live next to that townhouse riffraff, you know.
Yeah, and that is a reality. That's a stigma that's generally associated with the term affordable housing because, you know, people do invest in their homes and the quality of the community and the neighborhood. Let's face it, it impacts the value of your home and the quality of your life. So, and when we mentioned earlier about Leon County and the city and the that joint affordable housing work group, those were some of the challenges they were, charged to tackle in terms of ensuring that affordable housing, if our initiative is, as Michael said, to ensure that it's multifamily, multi-income use, looking at models around the country that have done that successfully. And so, the most recent trip Michael mentioned going to Atlanta was one particular model called the purpose-built models that considers that encourages multi-income, multi-family development so that there really is no distinction in terms of how the home, the appearance of the home, or even the standard for the building materials that are a part of the home. There is no distinction between what that home looks like for a low-income owner versus, a high-income owner. So, yeah, there is stigma there, but we are aware of that and looking at ways to ensure that we, eliminate that.
So there's a lot of misinformation around this topic. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people see a housing that looks like slum housing, and they thought, oh, there's the affordable housing, and it is not right. Affordable housing. It's actually market-rate housing. It's housing that had no subsidy in it whatsoever that anyone can live in, but there are people who are going to live in it are going to be low income because nobody else wants to live there. But it's market rate housing. It's owned by someone who wants to make a profit. It's not affordable. But people look at it and they think because it's bad or ugly that that's affordable housing, and it's not. In fact, affordable housing is most often the most beautiful housing. That started a number of years ago. And it's been hard for folks to make that shift, especially people who are older, maybe, and come from parts of the nation where they have seen those mistakes that were made by public housing authorities in particular with large scale. I mean, this is the way the federal government, drove this to be. Cheap, ugly housing that, ended up being blown up, right? That is not, and it has not been the housing that's been affordable housing for a long time. Affordable housing is aesthetically equal to or even better than what you might see in market rate housing. There's a reason for that, to avoid this neighborhood opposition that, as Wanda said, we did address, we always do need to address. I know that I address that issue not just statewide, but even nationally. It is an issue everywhere that we always have to deal with. Sometimes it's about that housing. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's about discrimination, which is unlawful because we have a Fair Housing Act that does not allow that discrimination. But the most important thing up front is education and for folks to say, actually, take them on a tour and say and show them the affordable housing in the community. And they're like, wow, I didn't know this was affordable housing. I thought this was a really cute house. I was thinking maybe I'd like to live in this house, because that's really where it needs to start is an education about affordable housing, both what it looks like and the folks who are living in it, both. And if people really understood that, there wouldn't be the neighborhood opposition.
And I'm really glad you said that. Everybody has a story, and we talked about, what is the face of not only poverty or affordable housing, but who are we building for? Who are we talking about going into these homes? And that's why I mentioned what I mentioned earlier, because a lot of times we think it's low income. It's those folks over there. And it's really not. I mean, the beauty of the Alice report is it shows it's the person that's pouring your cup of coffee at Starbucks. It may be your bank teller. Bank tellers don't make a whole lot of money. It may be your property manager. It may be your low-end accountant. It may be a number of people. And it may be some of those folks that are further down the spectrum. But to go back to one of the other things that you mentioned, Jamie, affordable housing does not necessarily mean cheap housing. It doesn't mean low quality housing. You know, for us at Habitat, we build some of the best houses in the state. We're all Florida Green built. Typically for our homes, we come in the top four or five across the state, across all green built homes. And that's not just other Habitat builders. That's all builders, you know, private market, public market, building energy efficient homes. Like, we are in the top four or five for Big Bend Habitat for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. So the house that we built is really amazing. And that's not just true to us. A lot of affordable home ownership developers built really nice products. And when you go to the for-profit side, again, they're for-profit. So whatever they can cut corners on, they may, not to say they all do, but our incentives are quite different.
All right. Well, thank you all today for joining me for this conversation on affordable housing. I think it's been a great conversation and something that I hope we'll continue to have in the future. Perspectives is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance is provided by Evan Rossi with Laidell Rawls on the phones. I'm Regan McCarthy. Next week, we'll be enjoying the sounds of the holidays with Tom Flanagan, who will return to talk with Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra director Darko Buderak about the songs of the season.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts.